Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome, welcome, welcome on this lovely Sunday afternoon with myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, Medium Wave 1548. We are on the Globetrotting program talking of different destinations. Today in particular, we're going to be talking about Malaysia. But before we go ahead with that, we're talking of times where we are now already into the holiday period. People are getting ready, people are moving, people are rolling, the exams are finished. You can see the joy on some of the people, on some of the students' faces. Some of them are now nervous, some of them don't know if they're coming or going. So all that is happening at this time of the year. But more than that, everybody's getting ready, whoever's going for holiday. Companies that are closing around about the 12th, 13th, 14th, the companies are closing early this year. Schools are closing late though, but those companies that are closing early, those are the people that are pushing out for their holidays already. And good luck to all of you, whoever's going out, inshallah, Allah make it easy for you, Allah protect you, Allah make it possible that you have a good time, and Allah protects you through and through while you are on safar, inshallah. And while you're on safar, specifically, I'm asking you to make dua for me. Allah make it easy for myself, for my family, and also for everybody at large. Allah protect everybody. Allah make it easy for one and all. So when we are out on a, I would say, on a safar, on a holiday, please make dua for the entire ummah. Make dua specifically also for the Palestinians, for the Syrians, for all those people that are in problems at the moment. Allah make it easy for each one, inshallah. Now, when it comes to different holiday places, different destinations, it's sometimes such a difficult choice to make. But when you finish up and when you get to your holiday, if you are not a complainer, believe me, you'll have a lovely holiday. But those that bicker and complain and have those that type of attitude, you are for sure not going to enjoy your holidays. I've seen it. People that complain, when they go for a holiday, they come back complaining. But when you go for a holiday and you just make do with whatever's happening, you make shukr to the Almighty Allah for whatever Allah is, the ni'mat that Allah has given you. With all that, believe me, you'll have a lovely holiday. But start complaining and voila, you are now going to enjoy your holiday in such a way that you will not, you'll dread it most. So don't complain. So all the, I've had many complainers. You know, they go for holiday, they come back and they complain of different places. Do not complain. It's not worth it. You are there for 10 days, 12 days, 14 days. Don't complain. Make do, come back and you've had a good holiday. But once you start complaining, I promise you, once you start complaining of the smallest things, you are sure to have a rotten holiday. So stop complaining. Whoever's out there complaining, just stop it. You will have a good time, inshallah. That's about it. But more than that, inshallah, I wish you all the luck, everything of the best. And today we're going to talk about Malaysia. We had Tourism Malaysia in South Africa, which pulled out from here due to their financial reasons. We had Malaysian Airlines also that pulled out from South Africa, also due to financial reasons. But Malaysia is still a destination of choice. We've had many people asking about Malaysia, wanting to go to Malaysia, either Malaysia, Singapore together, but lots of people are still wanting to go there. So we are going to be talking to Brother Jamil Karim, who was with Tourism Malaysia and who's a fundi on Malaysia, together with all the other Malaysian brothers that were in the Tourism Malaysia office. But Jamil Karim stood out and he knows Malaysia backwards. So we're going to be talking to Brother Jamil Karim. Alhamdulillah, as mentioned, we do have Brother Jamil Karim, who used to be with Tourism Malaysia before. And he's given us lots of advice, as I mentioned early on, that whenever it came to Malaysia, there was one stop for me whenever I needed information. And that was from Tourism Malaysia. There were a few brothers there were a few people at Tourism Malaysia. And one of them in particular, as I mentioned, is Jamil Karim. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam.
Jazakallah. Jazakallah for joining us on the Sunday afternoon talking about Malaysia. Although we know Malaysian Airlines, Tourism Malaysia has pulled out from South Africa, but talking about Malaysia, the reason why I thought I'd talk to you about Malaysia is that who else know better about Malaysia than you? Because from my experience, together where we explored Malaysia, alhamdulillah, I think you know Malaysia backwards. So jazakallah for joining us once again.
JazakAllah, Alhamdulillah.
Now, when it comes to Malaysia, why I thought I talk about Malaysia, although we don't have Malaysian Airlines and it's a bit of a difficult issue for South Africans traveling to Malaysia because you obviously have to have a connecting flight going to Malaysia. But from here, from South Africa, going to Malaysia, lots of people now in December, I had spoken about this extensively over the last 3-4 weeks. People during this time of the year are looking for holiday destinations. So obviously, as we know, going up to the north is a bit of an issue when you're going to the western side because of the weather. But when you're looking at coming towards the eastern side, you have Indonesia, you have Malaysia, you have Laos, you have Myanmar, you have Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, you have all those countries. Weather this time of the year is fantastic for our South Africans. So now, just more about Malaysia. Lots of people are asking to go to a destination where weather is good for them currently. And I've been suggesting those that haven't been to Malaysia, and some of them that's been to Malaysia already, I've been suggesting to them that if you haven't been to Malaysia, then at least explore Malaysia. Now, give us some of your thoughts on Malaysia and the country as a whole at this time of the year, Brother Jamil.
Sure. Look, there's quite a lot to do in Malaysia still, and a lot of people are looking for destinations that are not so commercialized. So they're moving away from the sort of Thailand, Bali places, and they're looking for something a bit more quiet, something with a bit more what we call Muslim tourism, so halal tourism. So where all this will fit in will be more appropriate in like places like Langkawi, where it's not so commercialized, where they offer hotels and resorts with piped kirat and Quran, where they have Quran in the room, where they have secluded areas in the beaches for the Muslim women that want to use the bathing facilities there. Also in Kota Kinabalu, so you're looking at now Malaysian Borneo on the east of Malaysia, very, very, becoming very popular with the Muslim tourism market. If the listeners can go on to places like Crescent Rating, they'll be able to see that the Muslim tourism sector is growing quite a lot. Now you're looking at it over at least $1.3 billion dollars spent in Malaysia, the Far East itself, just on halal tourism. So there is big opportunities there for Muslims. Number two is what, having said that Malaysia Airlines is not in the country, the tourism from Malaysia, from South Africa to Malaysia is still growing very fast. We're looking at around an 8-9% increase already for 2018 without the tourism board and the airline not here already. So these type of
South African tourists going into Malaysia from South Africa, obviously there's, you've got to have connecting flights and so on, and it's picking up on tourism?
Yeah, so it's picking up. So you've got your airlines such as Air Mauritius using the new Airbus A350-900. You've got Emirates, they started operating all A380 services into Kuala Lumpur from Dubai.
Yeah.
You can fly via Qatar, so it's Doha. You can fly through Abu Dhabi. And also, Ethiopian Airlines is becoming very popular with the Muslim tourism market, also because of this price-sensitive buyers that are looking to go for a bit more affordable packaging. So, yeah, Ethiopian Airlines.
So, these other airlines that we're talking of, all these airlines, obviously now it's not Malaysian Airlines, so all these other airlines, do they fly directly into Kuala Lumpur or do they go to all the other states as well?
So, a few of them do go to other states. For example, if you're looking at Qatar Airways, they fly into Penang as well, and they fly into Kuala Lumpur. Emirates flies into Kuala Lumpur itself. If you're going to go Cathay Pacific, you can fly into Penang, you can fly into Kota Kinabalu directly from Hong Kong, or you can fly into Kuala Lumpur. And if you fly with Singapore Airlines directly into Singapore, which is a 10-hour flight from South Africa, you've got the sister carrier Silk Air, which is about to be dissolved into Singapore Airlines to become a Singapore Airlines wholly owned. They fly into all the states such as Sarawak, they fly into Langkawi, Penang, Kota Kinabalu, Kuala Lumpur as well.
I had flown Silk Air also. It's a beautiful airline and very, very service orientated, and it's a very clean airline. And you say that now it's going to be no more.
Yeah, that's going to be dissolved into Singapore Airlines. So that's basically Singapore Airlines regional carrier in the Far East. And that will be dissolved into Singapore Airlines soon. So it will be Singapore Airlines itself, basically.
Ah, okay, right. Now,
idea, just a little idea, or there are some listeners that ask us for ideas also. We give them ideas. Now, going into, if you're flying Singapore Airlines, you stay in Singapore for 2-3 days, or Singapore being small but very, very expensive, you got to consider that, right? Yeah. But to stay in Singapore, and if you want to visit the southern part of Malaysia, instead of flying into Kuala Lumpur and then coming down again to Johor, for example, where you got your Legoland and so on, you rather go from Singapore, you drive up, or you take these buses going right up to Johor where Legoland is, and you come back into Singapore and then fly out and go up to Kuala Lumpur. That's a good idea?
Yeah, so basically what you can do is you can fly with Air Mauritius, which is a very good carrier for this type of route. So you can fly into Singapore and fly out of Kuala Lumpur. You can book your ticket that way. The best thing to do is to fly into Singapore, take a bus immediately out of Singapore, which costs about $7 Singapore across the causeway into Johor. What you pay there per room per night, around 400-500 rand for a 3-star hotel, you'll be paying about 2.5 to 3 times as much in Singapore. Singapore, you must know, is the rand to the Singapore dollar is times 10, whereas to the Malaysian ringgit is 3.3, so your rand will stretch much further in Johor itself. And then from Johor to visit Singapore is very simple. You can just jump across the border. It takes about 45 minutes. It costs you about 1 ringgit 20, which is about $5.
Yeah.
And you can basically go to the MRT station. From there, you can go right into Marina Bay Sands. You can go to Orchard Road. You can go to the Universal Studios theme park. You know, that area is actually known as the Orlando of Southeast Asia. So basically, your Orlando theme park, Legoland, Hello Kitty Town, Bob the Builder, Thomas and Friends, Angry Birds theme park, everything is in the south part. And also, they open what they call Desaru Coast, which is an island resort area on the east of Johor, mainly catered for those people looking to go to the south of Malaysia or Singapore itself and they're looking for an island or beach type holiday. Desaru Coast is actually the new product that came up there.
That is part of Malaysia?
That is part of Malaysia. That's in the state of Johor.
Right, the southern part of Malaysia. So it's bordering Singapore then?
Yeah, so basically what's going to happen eventually is they're going to start having sea transfers from Singapore as well into Desaru Coast for those people looking to get to Desaru Coast itself for an island holiday from Singapore, because Singapore doesn't have much of an island product. So basically Malaysia is going to start
getting
it's an island, but there's no such beach product, rather. So this is going to fill that gap that they don't have.
Exactly. So that will make a difference. So our advice here is, if anybody's flying in that direction, you do get flights flying into Singapore and out of Malaysia. I don't. And when it comes to price wise, you see, when you do things like that, sometimes it's against you when it comes to pricing of tickets. Now, in this case, was which airline, and what do you think about pricing if you're doing something like that?
So basically, you've got Air Mauritius that flies into Singapore, flies out of Kuala Lumpur. You've got Ethiopian Airlines flying into Singapore, flying out of KL. Emirates, Qatar, Etihad, you can use all of those carriers as well. So there's quite a lot of options there. The other thing you need to take note of is the land transfers as well between the two. There is land transfers. It does take some time. So I always suggest people to fly out of Senai Airport or also Sultan Aziz Airport in Johor. You can fly with Fire flights into Subang Airport, which is the other airport in Kuala Lumpur that caters for the low-cost carriers like Fireflies. That'll cost you like about 150 to 200 rand per flight one way from Johor into Kuala Lumpur. There's multiple options also with AirAsia to fly into KLIA2, which is Asia's largest low-cost carrier terminal. There's quite a lot of options other than just taking a bus, because two things is, it's either you're going to spend all your time on the road, which is about 3 to 4 hours to get to KL, or to just cut that time down and get directly into KL. So it's up to you. You can even stop in Malacca on your way there, stay a night or two, and then get into Kuala Lumpur using a bus, or you can take the either direct train service as well that goes straight to Kuala Lumpur from Singapore.
That's also another idea. If you're flying into Singapore, you stay in Singapore 2 or 3 days. From Singapore, then you go up to Johor, which is, like you said, 45-50 minutes into Johor. There's Legoland, and they've got some theme parks there. Stick around there for about a day or two. I think 2 days maximum there. And then from there, if you want to, it would be a good idea to drive up, as you said, drive up to Melaka. Melaka is also another good place to go to. It's very old Portuguese. It was a Portuguese city, I believe. And
So it's basically got a lot of history of Portuguese Cape Dutch. So basically, Jan van Riebeck's wife was buried there. So you'll be able to see her. You'll be able to see her tombstone. That they even said that the tombstone was removed from Cape Town and brought to Melaka. So it's actually got a little bit of South African Dutch heritage linking us to Melaka there as well.
Lots of people don't talk about Melaka at all, but Melaka is a very, very, it's a peaceful place, very ancient city, but a nice place to go to then.
Very nice place to go to, a lot of Chinese culture there as well. Look, I've always been traveling to Kuala Lumpur, and the one thing I always try to do was to do Melaka. But Melaka, I always feel if you want to stay there one night maximum, 2 days to tour the place. Otherwise, you can do it as a day trip, leaving in the morning from the TBS bus station in Kuala Lumpur. You can take a drive down to Melaka. It'll take about 3 hours, 3.5 hours. And then book your return ticket back to Kuala Lumpur immediately when you get there to Melaka. That way, you know you've got a confirmed ticket. You can just take a taxi to the bus station in Melaka and back to Kuala Lumpur. You'll be back there by around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the evening. And back in your hotel. So it's like you can do it as a day trip. If you have children, it will be a bit difficult. If you are the type of adventurous and
If
you sort of look, my wife and I used to be a bit crazy when we used to do these things, but it worked out quite well for us in the end because we got to see a lot more of Malaysia in a very short time.
Yes. Okay, we're going to talk a little more about Melaka, but we'll do that right after the break. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. If you just joined us, you're listening to myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, Medium Wave 1548, on the Globetrotting program. And today, as you hear, I do have Brother Jamil Karim, who used to be with Tourism Malaysia, who are no longer in the country, but he's very, very, very connected with Malaysia, and he knows Malaysia very well. As you heard before the break, when it comes to talking of Malaysia, he knows it backwards. And he's done it, like we just heard, himself and his wife. They did road trips in Malaysia where they saw much, much more in Malaysia. That is why he's experienced more and he knows more about Malaysia. Now, that is the way to do it. When it comes to traveling, when it comes to going to any country, instead of flying from one city to another major city, rather use road transport where you can see more. Now, when you're talking of that, alhamdulillah, I managed to do from Penang down to Kuala Lumpur. We did a bus trip from Penang to Kuala Lumpur. But we stopped in between certain places. We stayed over in some jungle areas. But what a beautiful trip we had. Now, that is exactly what Brother Jamil is talking about. Brother Jamil, Jazakallah for joining us on this Sunday afternoon once again. And your knowledge on Malaysia, it's just amazing, because I feel that when it comes to Malaysia, people fly into the country, they go into Kuala Lumpur, they fly out of Kuala Lumpur and say, we've been to Malaysia. That's not Malaysia.
Yeah, there's quite a lot to think about when you just land into a country. Any country for that matter, there is too much to do. So you basically, once you get into a country, it's not just the type of destination and itineraries you look at. You've got to look at product. So you've got basically, if you're looking at theme parks for kids and things like that, you got to look at that aspect. You've got food trails, you've got history, culture, heritage, islands and beaches, adventure, nature. The sky is the limit when it comes to tourism product. And to experience everything in one trip is, I'd say it's not possible at for most places, because some places are very big. But if possible, I'd say try and squeeze in at least about 22 to 28 day holiday if time allows for leave from work, and then you'll be able to see Malaysia at your own leisure, at your own pace, and you'll do it properly and you'll enjoy it a lot.
Really enjoy it. In other words, where you're going to see the entire country, because if you look at Malaysia as a whole, you got from the north, you've got the Kedah state, there where you've got Penang, then you've got Langkawi, then you've got Kelantan, then you've got Terengganu, which is on the eastern side, and then you've got Selangor State, which is where Kuala Lumpur is. Then you have Pahang, which is on the eastern side again. Then you have Malacca on the western side. Then you have Johor, which is down south again. So there's so much. And then talking about all that, what about then Sabah and Sarawak? That is also another holiday destination on its own, I would say.
So, looking at niche products, once you talk about Sabah, Sarawak, the niche products are going to start filling up here. You've got spelunking, so you've got the world's biggest limestone caves in Sarawak. You've got one of the world's best dive sites in and around the Miri as well. You've got the top three world's best dive sites as well in east coast of Sabah, which is Mabul, Sipadan, Kapalai. And then when you go into the east of Sabah, sorry, the west of Sabah itself, you've got Kota Kinabalu, you've got Southeast Asia's highest mountain peak, Mount Kinabalu, which is 4,100 meters high. It's a two-day climb. You've got that with the forestry area together with the islands and beaches, which is about a 15-minute boat ride to the islands. You can where you have the zip lining from island to island, so you can go to the Tunku Abdul Rahman Marine Park there. There's a lot of shopping, there's seafood areas on the promenade. So there's quite a lot to do in Kota Kinabalu itself. Just aside from the technology, aside from, or just getting away rather from the theme parks and the everything else.
Now, talking of going to Kota Kinabalu, from Kuala Lumpur, you take a flight up to Kota Kinabalu. There is an airport in, there is a domestic airport in Kota Kinabalu. Now, to fly, what's the distance then?
Okay, so from Kota Kinabalu to, from KL to Kota Kinabalu, it's about a 3-hour flight with Air Asia. It is an international airport, not a domestic airport. You've got flights from Hong Kong, and also fly directly into Kota Kinabalu. You've got Silk Air or Singapore Airlines that fly also from Singapore into Kota Kinabalu, so it is an international airport. And it has all the international airport facilities, basically, and also, well, if you're looking at transfers and things from the airport, very, very cheap. If you're looking at hotels in Kota Kinabalu, you're also looking at the same prices from around 500 to 600 rand per room per night for 3-star hotel. It is very, very affordable. Still amongst the in the top 10 world's most affordable destinations to travel to.
Okay, so it is about our distance to go from Kuala Lumpur. So while you are there, while you're on the island, because it's a separate island just above Indonesia. While you are there, you obviously have Brunei, which is also part of that particular island. So to go into Brunei, as South Africans, we need visas. Now, to get visas, there's no embassy in South Africa or Brunei. So what do we do in that case then?
Yeah. In that case, you have to go through to the embassy, the closest embassy. But mostly the Malaysian embassy does assist a bit in this as well. I haven't heard of a lot of South Africans doing this, but they do go to the embassies in the Brunei embassy in Kuala Lumpur to get their visas sorted out. So basically, they get all the information from here, and then they go there. So what South Africans normally go there for is diving. But the other thing that South Africans go to Brunei for when they go for diving is they're not actually diving in Brunei itself. They're actually diving in Labuan, which is a state of Malaysia. So it's basically going out into international waters, and then you're crossing into Labuan and you're diving there. So that's actually another state of Malaysia. There's 3 states of Malaysia in Borneo itself. So you've got Sabah, Sarawak, and Labuan. Then you've got the country of Brunei, basically on the island of Borneo. Borneo is the third largest island in the world. And then you've got...
Is Labuan another state again? I thought it was just a city there.
Labuan is actually a state.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then you've got the Indonesia part of Borneo as well, on the east of Borneo.
Yes, right, okay. Because Borneo...
Which is Kalimantan,
Where Labuan is, it's between the north is Sabah, the south is Sarawak, then you have Labuan in the middle. And that is like very narrow, where it borders Indonesia on the one side, yes.
That's correct, yeah. And then Kalimantan, obviously, on the east, but that's Indonesian Borneo.
That's Kalimantan.
Kalimantan, yes.
Right, okay. Now, what about Terengganu? If you're looking at Malaysia as a whole, lots of people haven't spoken of Terengganu. Is there a place?
Okay, so Terengganu basically is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite an upcoming destination also, but people need to realize that that part of Malaysia is on the east coast of Peninsula Malaysia. It's better to go there during the from March to around the beginning of October. Reason being is because of monsoon rains in the area, monsoon winds as well. But if you're looking at rains and winds, the sea just does get a bit choppy, sort of like Durban's water. So for South Africans, we are used to it. Malaysia in December is basically like South Africa's summer weather. And it's basically, we climatize very well to every destination we go to on holiday anyway. So we make the best of every situation. So Terengganu is definitely...
During that time of the year in Malaysia, it's very humid, eh?
It is very humid. Not as humid, though, as May, June, July, August, because that is the hottest time to visit Malaysia. Although it's tropical, temperatures all year round, you do tend to notice a difference in May, June, July, and August because of the heat.
It does dip. And also, very much like how we, in Vietnam, when you look at it, that time of the year, mid-year, extremely hot, and humidity of about 80%, 80-85%. So that is the killer. Although the same heat you will get in November, December, January probably, but not as humid as mid-year.
Yeah, because that's because the sea on that side, especially the Andaman Sea and things like that, South China Sea, the water is quite warm. It's around 26 to 28 degrees, so the water is quite warm. So the humidity tends to be higher during that time as well. And also, when the rains come down, then you also start to notice the humidity also. But where people like to go and cool off is the highland resorts, basically like Genting Highlands, Cameron Highlands resorts. Those type of places are quite cool. That's where the locals go a lot to just basically chill out.
Right. That's exactly what... In fact, if you're looking at the island itself, where you've got coastline right around, but you have different types of beaches on the east, on the west, southern side, all different. Like, for example, if you're looking at up north, you've got Kedah State, so you've got Penang, and you've got probably further up north, you've got better beaches than what you see down south, I think.
Yeah. So it's sort of like that. So you're going to see a difference in the type of waters as well from the east to the west coast. West coast, you've got more of your emerald green type waters, whereas on the east coast, you've got more of your bluish waters in Redang and Tioman, places like that. So you'll notice a difference, especially as you go north, like you said. The waters in the south is not as good as the waters in the north because the salt, the sea sand is also quite... You've got more white sand beaches up towards the north. This is where you see the difference. But in Langkawi itself, if you go to Datai Beach, it's what they call a gold sand beach. Yes. So that sand is quite... Also, the sea is very clear. It's that emerald green type waters. But that sand is... I've never seen a color of red sand anywhere else in the world that I've been to. It actually looks like it's gold, basically.
Okay,
and then the other beaches that you get in Langkawi, which people like to stay at, is Chinang Beach. Very popular with restaurants, hotels, resorts, and things. And then you've got Tanjung Rhu Beach, which has had a lot of these Bollywood films filmed there as well. So you've got a lot of TV-proven beaches that people go to. It's more of like people need to see that those type of places, and it is something to see. However, you need to consider that everybody is looking at going to those places, so it does get a bit more commercialized. It does get very full. So I always tend to tell people to just visit the quieter beaches. Rather, you might find it quiet, but it is much better. You'll still get very good clear waters, especially at the marine parks like the Pulopaya Marine Park, which is just south of Langkawi, between Penang and Langkawi. You can do your snorkeling there, you can do diving. If you're not a diver, they'll actually teach you, they'll just give you a brief instruction of how to dive, and then they'll take you down as well for around 20-30 minutes, so you can experience that.
Now, when it comes to time period, lots of people, they ask me, when it comes to flying into Malaysia, they tell me, listen, we don't want to only be in Kuala Lumpur. Can we go for about 7 days to Langkawi and 2 days probably in Kuala Lumpur? 7 days Langkawi, is it too much?
Well, they need to ask themselves the question, how long would they go to Durban for, basically? Do they like Durban? Do they like the islands and beaches? Normally, you get the people in Durban that will go to the islands And stay for five nights, and then go to Kuala Lumpur, stay maybe two or three nights there. The guys in Johannesburg will definitely go for longer periods to the seaside. I myself go for around 9 to 10 days at least to any island or resort place, because I know I'm not going to see an island or resort for quite a while, because there's nothing like that in Joburg. So, so yeah, so it basically depends on exactly what type of product you're looking at. It depends on will it suit you to be there for 2 to 3 days. It also depends on what you want to do. Are you an adventure type of person? Are you a water sports type of person? If you are a water sports type of person like myself, I'm a micro level diver. So I like to go to these places because I got a lot more to explore aside from just the land part.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. And to explore those places with warm waters, underwater, when you do scuba diving, it's amazing. Huh? It's beautiful.
It just takes it's a whole different level of travel than once you start doing
absolutely.
All of this.
Now, if you spend time in Penang as well as Langkawi, now if somebody that wants to go up north and spend time on the coastline, your advice as far as Penang and Langkawi is concerned, or either one of the two.
Look, it's also now depending, because it's two totally different products. Penang is basically your food culture heritage type product, whereas Langkawi is more your island beach nature adventure product. So if you want to do a bit of both of them, I'd say you can split it in 5 days. You can do 2 nights in Penang, it's more than enough, and you can do 3 nights in Langkawi. 3 nights or 4 nights if you want to push it a bit more. There is quite a lot to do there. You can fly between the two destinations using Air Asia or Malaysia Airlines, Fireflies, Masswings. You can fly between the two destinations, about a 25-30 minute flight. Otherwise, you don't even have to do that. You can just take a boat ride, just about a 3-hour boat ride between Penang and Langkawi itself.
Penang, if you're looking at Penang probably got more to do in Penang, because you've got your night markets, you've got the beaches, you've got the town itself. There's much more to do in Penang. So you've got the best of both worlds in Penang, whereas in Langkawi, you've just got the beaches.
Yeah, well, in Penang, the beaches are not as nice as Langkawi, I'd say. People don't really visit the beaches as much as they do in Langkawi. It's more of the night markets and things that people do take advantage of. And like I said, 2 nights should be enough, according to what statistics are showing us, that a lot of people go there for 2 nights maximum. The reason being they're doing it is because they're there for 3 days. So basically, they'll arrive in the morning on the first day, and then they'll depart on the evening on the third day, and that way they get 3 full days there, basically, with just 2 nights of accommodation, and then get into Langkawi. So that way, at least you'll be able to explore a bit more of the island. There is a lot to do in Penang, but I feel also, once you get there, it's literally the same as the product differentiation is basically the same as in Singapore. You can't do much with the island and beach part of it, but you can do a lot with the other products.
Yeah, that's true also. And then the trip that we undertook when we went to the north, we flew into Kuala Lumpur in transit. We flew up to Penang. And from Penang, we took a coach and we came down. But coming down through the forests and through those jungle areas, we stayed in some of those forest resorts. Coming down between Kuala Lumpur and Penang, it took us, I think we drove for, well, we obviously stopped in between, but it took us about 5 days from the top to come down to Kuala Lumpur. And we stayed over in some of these places. For example, we stayed over in Ipoh. Beautiful. We stayed in lodges that was in the forests. The theme of that lodge was only foresty. But what a beautiful scene when you're sitting up there, getting up in the morning, sunrise through those trees. You hear the sound of monkeys. The animals were just by the thousands at night. You could just hear them. But that was a pure holiday where you could totally relax as driving from Penang coming down to Kuala Lumpur. That's also another way of doing it.
Yeah, so basically if you're looking at traveling between the two destinations, there's quite a lot to do. You've got hot water springs in caves. There's got a place called Gopeng between the two, situated in Ipoh, where you've got white water rafting, you've got caving, and also with that you can do waterfall abseiling as well. We've done all of those things, and it's all niche products that's situated between Kuala Lumpur and Penang itself. So if you're going to do something like that, like you said, it took you 5 days. For those adventure nature type people, you it will probably take them much longer because they'll spend much more time trying to see exactly what Nature Adventure has to offer. And they notice a lot of Muslim students and things from South Africa, at least Southern Africa itself, are starting to go to Malaysia just for the adventure part. So basically, if you're looking at Peninsula Malaysia, like between Penang and Kuala Lumpur, also in Borneo, they're starting to do the adventure part. People are getting quite tired now of the normal city type holiday-based island beaches and things like that. And you want to do something a bit different, try and branch out of the comfort zone and try something different. And this is what happens when you have these type of adventure enthusiasts going into Malaysia, is that you start getting all this luxury or basically a niche type accommodation in the forestry areas. Very comfortable, very nice. Food is halal, comfort, even entertainment. Everything is top-notch, and with that you get also all the adventure and things that you want to do together with the mosquito bites and everything that you come up with.
Oh, yes, I was about to come to that as well. But if you're doing that particular trip, you've got to have your mosquito coils, you've got to have your creams, you've got to have all that in order because you will not have ankles left again.
Yeah, that's true. I noticed a lot of the guys were limping on our way back to KL after that whitewater raft. It was funny to see, actually. But I also tell people to try and do this. Like we normally take Schweppes Dry Lemon, it's got a quinine inside, yes, that does chase the mosquitoes away. In Malaysia, you get the same thing. It's also from Schweppes. It's called Bitter Lemon. So if you are in Kuala Lumpur, buy a couple of cans for yourself. Try and drink that. It actually goes through your bloodstream quite nicely. The mosquitoes leave you alone, so that's quite nice.
Okay, that's a good secret. Now, in Kuala Lumpur City, what attractions do we have in Kuala Lumpur City? We know we have the Twin Towers, we have the shopping malls. What else is there good to go to in Kuala Lumpur City? Because lots of people say when you go there, there's nothing to do. What is there that we can attract people to Kuala Lumpur to?
So basically, Aquaria KLCC is very, very nice. I notice a lot of South Africans are starting to flock there. The other thing is the KL Gardens and parks. People are trying to see what type of...
Okay, now when you're looking at going, especially in Kuala Lumpur, the whole of Malaysia, food is halal. Across the board, that's what we know.
Yeah, 95% of the time you get your halal food there.
Ah, okay, right. Now talking of food fusion, you have different types of food. You have Malaysian food. You have, because it's in that peninsula, you have Chinese also. So you probably have Chinese food together with Malaysian mix. And Indian food also, because there's lots of Indian culture there.
Yeah, so basically Indian, Chinese, Malay, Portuguese, Dutch cuisine, everything just merged into one. And you'll get a mix of them as well. You'll get foods that you haven't thought of before, but people stick to the most popular, such as nasi lemak, satay. They love the satay, especially with the peanut sauce and things like that. So they look more forward towards the local foods itself. I notice a lot of people as well go there for quite a long time because staying in Malaysia now is starting to increase. People are starting to go there for around 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, because it's so affordable to get to Malaysia. And what, having said that, they get tired of the food after a while, so they want to go back to normal food. So you do get your Pakistani restaurants if you want. You do get your Pakistani food. You get your Indian food, everything there as well. But the local food fusions and things are a must try, especially in Kuala Lumpur, the night markets, in and around Central Market, and other parts of Bukit Bintang. There is a lot to taste. It's basically a gastronomic experience.
Yeah, when it comes to food, you find all these nasi kandas all over now. I'll explain to you what that is. The very first time when I went there and I saw a nasi kanda, I thought, who's going to eat there? They have a whole lot of tables in the middle. They have buffet right around in those Ben Marais. Then they have in the in those ovens of theirs. They have different types of food. They've got like probably about 40 different items on the menu, and you can choose whatever you want. You can fill your plate with 10 different items from there. You come to the counter and you'll pay for whatever you've eaten, and you can have from vegetable to beef to chicken to mutton, you name it, you'll get everything there. Those are called the nasi kandas, and that is something which lots of people go to. You find lots of tourists coming into those places. It's like an open place restaurant, so called.
Yeah, and if you look at it, you can take, like I said, take all the food you want. Everything you're looking at, you fill up your plate, and when you get to time to pay, it costs you like $20. Because the equivalent of $20.
Exactly. Very, very cheap there. Now, that is Kuala Lumpur. What about Putrajaya, which is just on the outskirts of the city? You want to tell us a little more about Putrajaya, whoever wants to go to Putrajaya?
Yeah, so Putrajaya is basically like the government office capital of Malaysia. It's sort of like getting out of Johannesburg and going into Sandton, basically. So it's got a totally different vibe to it altogether. But there is definitely no sort of nightlife entertainment there. It's more of a business district. So you look got all your government offices, you got the parliaments there, there is the floating mosque in Putrajaya, Tourism Malaysia offices are there. And there is like boat tours and things around Putrajaya. There is shopping malls in it there as well. But it's always recommended that if you are going to go to Putrajaya, always have a purpose to going there for. Try and do some research on it. There is a lot to see in terms of architecture, the mysteries in it. Very, very nice. If that's what you're going for, brilliant place to visit. If not, if you're looking for entertainment, you're going to get basically shopping malls there. And I suggest you just stay in KL, in Bukit Bintang area, where you've got three of the world's top 10 biggest and best shopping malls as well. So you might as well just stick around in KL. But the architecture is definitely one must see in Putrajaya itself.
Now, what I like so much about Kuala Lumpur is all those shopping centers that they have. When they say they have a special, it's a genuine special. Unlike what we find here probably, where your normal price is, say, $49.99. When it's a special, they put it up to $59.99 and they'll tell you, we'll give you a 20% discount. There, the items are marked $49.99. You will get a discount. If they say 50%, you'll get a discount on the $49.99 tag. It's 50%. That's what I like of Malaysia, and that's a fact. That's exact, and I've proven that happens when it comes to real discounts. Anywhere in the world, you'll find they probably put up the price and then they give you a discount. Not Malaysia. From your experience?
Yeah. So basically, from my experience, is quite the same thing. So, for example, there used to be a shop in Cape Town at the V&A waterfront called Ponya. It's a Malaysian branded product. They sell shoes, wallets, clothing, and things like that. I was looking at a pair of shoes there for a while back, and I noticed just 3,000 for a pair of shoes. I thought, you know, that's definitely not within my budget. I'm not going to do it. When I go to KL, I'll find out how much it is there. I went there during the year-end sale. I actually picked up the same pair of shoes for around 270 rand. It's also an optional product also. So it just shows that basically what happens is what we pay in South Africa for a normal price in Malaysia is half.
Yes.
And when they have their 70% off sale during the Malaysia year-end sale, or it's called MES, you're actually paying 70% off their price, which is already half of what our price is, so you get it at a much, much lower rate. That's why a lot of the shopping is done in Kuala Lumpur, aside from places like Singapore, which is very expensive. Yeah. All the Singaporeans go to Johor, into a place called JPO, Johor Premium Outlets, where you'll get the same type of deals. You'll just see Singapore number plates all over the place, yeah, because that's where they do the shopping.
Exactly.
And bring it into Singapore. In Kuala Lumpur, is exactly the same thing. The only thing is, it's not full of Singaporeans, it's full of the world basically shopping in KL. And a lot of people go to places like Bangkok and things, and they'll decide, you know what, we should have bought this in Kuala Lumpur because it was cheaper there. It's better, and they've got much more later products than what they have in places like Bangkok, because the sales, tourism receipts in Kuala Lumpur is much higher than in Bangkok in terms of shopping.
So that's part of the shopping. Now, we're already out of time, but lastly, can we talk a little about Twin Towers?
Yeah, so basically, the Petronas Twin Towers is actually an upgraded product at the moment. So before, they used to just take you to the bridge in the center to go and view, and now take you right to the top. But there is a cost involved in that. It's 50 ringgits per person. And the other thing is, if you want to go to the top, you have to go very early in the morning to book a place or book a time, because you're going to be spending time in the Twin Towers, the Surya KLCC mall at the bottom, rather.
Yeah.
Because if you book a time at the mall, if you go 7 o'clock in the morning and you start booking your tickets, they'll probably give you a time like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because it does get very, very full. It's a very, very popular tourist spot. It's the world's tallest Twin Towers, and you can imagine that everybody wants to go to the top and see what it's
the
like.
But there's all a lot time, to do. The most beautiful time to see the building is at night, that particular Twin Towers.
Yes, it is very, very beautiful to see the city of Kuala Lumpur at night from the Twin Towers. If you don't make it to get to the top, it's not all, don't worry about that. You can just go to the KL Tower They've got a revolving restaurant there as well. You pay 35 ringgit, you can get to the top. It's open all the time. And you can see the whole of Kuala Lumpur from there. What the Twin Towers inside is also a very, very spectacular view. And, yeah, so people that couldn't make it for that, they just went to the KL Tower. And it's just, they've got their money's worth. And if you're really the adventure type, you can actually jumping to the top there as well.
Right. We're already out of time. I would, you know, I can spend another hour or two with you online with your knowledge on Malaysia, but we're already out of time. We unfortunately have to get out. And if there's anything further, I will definitely keep in contact with you. But we will have to have another show running about Malaysia, because it's just too much to talk about. I really, really would like to thank you for joining us on the Sunday afternoon talking about Malaysia. And it was much, much appreciated from our side for you to join us. Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah.
Jazakallah, my brother. That was brother Jamil Karim, who's a fundi, I would say, on Tourism Malaysia. And alhamdulillah, he's joined us talking about Malaysia, and I really appreciated that. Now, we'll see what's happening next week. Within the next 2 weeks or so, we're off to Vietnam for our normal tours and so on. So I'll be here next week. The following week, we're gone. But other than that, alhamdulillah, holiday season, all those that are planning their holidays now, next week after school's closed, I wish you all the luck, everything of the best. Look after yourself. Like I always say, take Islam with you. Do not leave your musalla behind. Do not leave your namaz behind. Please take that with you. Inshallah, Allah make it easy for you. Allah give you the best and give you barakat while you are on holiday, wherever you are. And Allah changes your intention for when you are on holiday to that of you being in the path of Allah, inshallah. Allah make it easy for you and for us all, inshallah. And you can follow us on Instagram, Globetrotting25, especially when we're abroad. We post a lot of pictures where people are joining us while we're on holiday, they're joining us for the same holiday, enjoying with us. The Instagram handle is Globetrotting25. It's GLOBETROTTING, Globetrotting25. You can follow us on that, and you'll be able to see Vietnam through our eyes, inshallah. And also our website, www.globetrotting.co.za. From myself, Muhammad Lambat, until next week, same place, same time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.